9:02. Present today, we have Vice Chair Geisel, Senator Wilkowski, and myself, Chair Dyson. Senator Coghill will be here shortly. Senator Stedman is excused. Helping us today, we have Stephanie Gavin and Nancy Jones. We've got the A-team helping us, and here's Senator Coghill. Please turn off your cell phones if you have one, and please also, we're going to take these things up. Somebody here from Senator McGuire's office? Okay, we'll take them up in order. We have some time constraints. We'll try to get through both of them. Please join us. This is the fee exemption for certain vehicles. Second, that's SB 45. The other one we'll take up is SB 44, some changes to the election codes. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Chair. Genevieve Watusik, staff to Senator McGuire. She's double booked this morning and apologizes for not being here herself. Senate Bill 45 is...
Wait a minute.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
I'm sorry. We need to take the official action to get the bill before us. Senator Geisel.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 45, version 28-LS0411/A to this committee, to in front of this committee.
Is there objection? Seeing none, please proceed.
Senate Bill 45 is an act setting special registration fees for alternative fuel vehicles and providing for an effective date. It's a progressive approach to providing incentives to the public for this new technology. It will help air quality issues and promote additional jobs through the application of this new technology and line of products. CNG vehicles will also help to displace petroleum and reduce emissions. They, too, can help Alaska diversify our energy requirements and help to insulate us from potential shocks to the state's oil supply. In addition, the public benefits promoting the sale of CNG vehicles will lower operating costs for consumers at a time when fuel costs represent an increasing portion of Alaskan family and small business budgets. This bill reduces the registration costs from $100 biannually to $20 biannually for certain vehicles that are electric, CNG, LNG, liquefied petroleum gas, hydrogen, or a liquid of at least 85% of the total volume. And that's what this bill does, if you have any questions.
Yeah, thank you. Any questions in the committee? Senator Wilkowski.
Yeah, thank you. I certainly support the concept. I just sort of wonder if you're going to buy an electric car and one of these alternative vehicles, whether or not saving the $75 or whatever is really going to have that much of an impact. But I did just have a question on the fiscal note, and I don't know if you're the person to answer that or not. And it seemed like there were some very high programming costs, and I was just wondering where those numbers came from, if you have any idea. They're estimating 250 hours of programming at $143 an hour, and then $25,000 every year. And my guess is that the cost to the state is probably going to be a heck of a lot more than the savings that would be incurred to the population as a whole. But any, are you familiar with any of the details on that?
I am a little bit through the chair, but Amy Erickson from the DMV is online, and she is the expert, so I'd like her to answer that if that's okay.
I'm sorry, who's that?
Amy Erickson from the DMV.
Yeah. Can you hear us, ma'am?
I can. Good morning. This is Amy Erickson, Director of the Division of Motor Vehicles. It's true. There is a fiscal note on this bill. There will be programming costs. We have to create several different fields in our database. And the initial cost for the program of this VIN decoder software is $75,000, and the recurring subscription is $25,000. We would need this decoder software because there are so many different types of vehicles, and we don't currently track fuel types in this manner and would need the VIN decoder to do that.
Any questions further, Mr. Senator Wilkowski? Thank you, ma'am. Please stand by. And just personally, I want to compliment you on how well the department is administering the services to the public. It is a picture of efficiency from the user perspective, in my view.
Thank you, sir. I'm proud to be a part of it.
Yeah, you're doing well. All right. And I might say, personally, Senator Wilkowski, this is an issue I've been following for a long, long time. This is probably a bit premature, but is a part of a suite of things that various jurisdictions have done to encourage the alternative fuel vehicles. And we perhaps ought to have a further discussion if indeed what this triggers is a lot of expenditure on the part of the department previous to there being there's not the infrastructure right now for particularly CNG and propane and LNG powered vehicles, and probably not hydrogen either, but the ethanol one is an open question. Please.
Yeah, through the chair, I agree, and hopefully, you know, it is a lot of money up front. I see that with the programming costs, but hopefully this will encourage people to buy these cars, you know, as time goes on, and hopefully it'll even out over time.
Yeah. Do you have someone who could speak to the timing of this, the very issue that Senator Wilmankowski and I have brought up?
I do not, but I can get back to you on that if you'd like.
I think I do. Because with that kind of a fiscal amount of effort taken, it's worth considering. So please, we're going to hold this over. Please don't consider that to be any negative attitude on what I consider to be a well-intended effort. Any other questions, Senator Giesel?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess my other concern, I share what's been expressed already in terms of concerns, but electric cars drawing on a battery, thinking about Fairbanks in the winter and the temperatures, I guess I'm wondering how realistic this technology even is for Alaska. Again, a big expenditure for something that may not be implementable for a very long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Through the chair, I know Juneau is trying an experimental program through AELMP. They're letting 10 users right now try it out, and they gave them meter readers to start with, and so they're seeing how it works here in Juneau.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Any other questions or comments? All right, we'll hold this one more. Sir, Senator Coghill.
Probably the implementation. It looks like you're going to allow the same deal for dual fuel. Is that, and maybe DMV needs to tell us, is that going to be within the same coding range?
Through the chair, I'm going to let DMV answer that.
Can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Through the chair, Senator Coghill, yes, we would.
All right, and please communicate to your boss, Senator McGuire, that on line 14, page 1, I would offer for her consideration a conceptual amendment that says right after the parens 2, powertrain and fuel supply may not be modified. Mm-hmm. I don't want somebody who has one of these vehicles that decides to put huge tires and wheels on it or make other modifications that do not affect the efficiency and all the desirable things that come from these alternative fuels. So please consider that. Anything else, the committee? All right, we'll set this bill aside and we'll go on to Senate Bill 44, an act relating to election practices and procedures. Senator Giesel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move committee substitute for Senate Bill 44, version 28-GS1983-U, as the committee's working draft.
And I'll object for discussion. Ms. Fermini.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Gail Finumiai from the Division of Elections, Director, Division of Elections. Senator Dyson asked me to explain the differences in the committee substitute before you from the original version of the bill. The first is in Section 3. It was an amendment added by Representative Lynn in the House State Affairs Committee hearing, which would require poll watchers to be registered voters in the state of Alaska. Section 4 is another amendment that was proposed by Representative Lynn in House State Affairs that would require people who serve on our state ballot counting review board to be registered voters in the state of Alaska. And just a note for the record that they currently are. They are required to be registered voters. It doesn't specifically state that they must be a registered voter, but their names are provided to us by members of political parties and whatnot, so therefore they are registered voters in the state of Alaska. Section 5 is another amendment by Representative Lynn, which states that the name of a person who requests an advisory opinion from the Alaska Public Offices Commission is redacted when that opinion is released to the public.
Say that again, please.
Sure. It is a provision that would allow for the name of the person requesting an advisory opinion from APOC to be redacted at the time that the advisory opinion is made public. So the name of the person requesting the advisory opinion would not be released to the public.
Thank you.
The last difference is found in Section 20, which is the section that adds something relating to election pamphlets, and for the, it states that for the primary election, candidate information such as their statement, their biography, and their photograph will be published on the division's website not later than 15 days before each election in which the candidate would appear on a ballot. That is a practice the division started in 2010 before the primary election. And it was a practice we were going to be continuing to do. Representative Lynn felt it would be a good idea to put it in statute to say that it is a mandate and something the division should continue, will have to continue to do. Those are the changes. Would you like me to walk through the rest of the bill?
I'd like you to go through the whole bill. Start out with, I think this bill solves some problems we've encountered and maybe makes things more efficient. So anyways, explain to us why the bill, and then why we're doing the bill, and then how it does it, which is perhaps the sectional analysis.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the bill is to serve a couple purposes, and one, the main just behind the bill is to ensure that the Division of Elections can meet federal mandate of allowing mailing ballots to military and overseas voters at least 45 days prior to each election. As a federal law, the division has been able to meet that deadline, but it's been very, very, very tight. Some of the provisions in the bill changed candidacy withdrawal deadlines, changed the date of the primary election, moving it 2 weeks earlier from what it currently is. The division doesn't have, it's not as difficult to meet that requirement for the primary election. However, the post-primary processes that happen set us up right to the 3 days before the ballots have to be in the mail for military and overseas voters, and it is quite a daunting task. And like I said, we have been able to meet it. The provisions in this bill would harmonize state law with federal law and make things a little bit easier to make sure that we are able to continue to be successful in meeting that provision of federal law.
Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could I just sort of have a general question about I've always sort of wondered why Alaska's primary was in August. Many other states have their primaries in February, and I know we're talking about just pushing it back a couple weeks, but do you know the general rationale for having it in August, why that ever occurred?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, and I'm sorry if I don't pronounce your name right. I have the same problem. I don't have a history as to why the primary was set in August. Ledge Research perhaps might have that. But it's, you know, it's been that way probably since this, at least the 60s, if not before.
Please continue.
Okay, so I'll go through the sections now of the bill, if that's
sure.
Fine with you. Section 1 of the bill states that the division may conduct advisory school board elections in regional educational attendance areas. The division currently conducts elections for regional educational attendance areas in 19 areas of the state, and this provision would say that the state would also conduct an advisory school board election as part of that regional educational attendance area.
Excuse me. Advisory. So these school boards don't have policy authority, they just advise the local school district, is that?
Mr. Chairman, each regional educational attendance area has an advisory board in the communities that make up the REAA.
Sure.
And and I assume, I don't know how they actually operate, that they actually are serve in an advisory capacity to the school board as a whole.
All right, thank you. Senator Wilkowski.
Yeah, thank you. Can you just explain what the practice is now regarding these areas? And I'm just trying to understand the rationale behind this provision. And I guess as you go along, if you could talk to me a little bit about the rationale for all the provisions. But in particular, I don't know anything about this at all, why we need this.
Through the chair. The advisory school board elections are currently conducted by the school board, and usually they take place on the same day in which we conduct the REAA elections. And the division was approached to ask if, since you're doing the REAA election, why can you not just do our school board advisory election? We did not have any statutory authority to conduct those types of elections.
What's the REA election again?
It's a regional educational attendance area elections, and those are school boards in unorganized areas of the state.
And if I could, Mr. Chair, is this no additional cost for this section at all?
Through the chair, that's correct.
Please continue.
Section 2 of the bill would allow a child who turns 18 while residing outside of the United States with their parents or guardian, who their parents and or guardian were previously domiciled here in the state before moving overseas for purposes of serving in the military, work, living overseas. The section is aimed at voters who turn 18 while living abroad with their parents or guardians, and it would allow them to vote absentee in federal elections. Currently, those voters are not allowed to register to vote in the state of Alaska as a federal-only voter.
So they would be allowed to vote in federal elections? Would they be allowed to vote in state elections?
The provision of statute that this is in, through the chair, is aimed at federal elections only.
Is there some reason we wouldn't want to allow them to vote in state elections also?
Through the chair, Senator, that would be the will of the committee. The division, I don't think, would have any objection to that. We do have a group of voters who are permanently domiciled overseas, and they're known as federal overseas voters, and their last state of residence was Alaska, and they are allowed to be registered in the state of Alaska and vote only in federal elections.
I would assume that part of the problem with Senator Wilkowski's question is we wouldn't know where they would live in the state.
Through the chair, that is correct. And so that is one of the reasons the federal overseas voters are only eligible to vote in federal-only elections, is because they were domiciled in the state, but they were actually never registered to vote in the state of Alaska prior to leaving the state.
Senator Wilkowski.
And on that note, we have many, many people who become domiciled in Alaska and then move outside and no longer have a residence here, and we let them vote in state elections, correct?
Through the chair, that's correct. If a voter is registered to vote in the state of Alaska and leaves the state, as long as they maintain an intent to return, they are allowed to maintain their voter registration in the state of Alaska and vote in our elections.
But how do we, and I mean, you have many of the, and I know because I'm sure we all do, we go door to door and we knock on people's doors, and you get someone who comes to the door and says, oh, they haven't lived here in 10 years, and that yet they're still registered at that specific address. So I don't understand the policy differentiation between allowing people who live here and move out and really maintain no ties with that district at all versus a student who is turning 18. I mean, is there a policy rationale for that difference?
Mr. Chairman, at this point in time, I don't have an answer for you at that question, but I'd be happy to take some time to think about it and come back with you with an answer for that. The statutes that this section would amend specifically address a person residing outside the United States who wants to register and vote absentee because they were not previously registered to vote in the state of Alaska prior to leaving.
So, Dyson, so the must be your assumption is that if they were registered to vote here, move out, that your default position is you assume they continue to have the right to vote in the district that they were registered in, and the default presumption is that when they come back, that's where they go, right?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. That's the assumption of their intent to return.
Yeah. We have online Scott Stinson. Department of Defense, military, and overseas voting. Can you hear us, Scott?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chair. My name is Scott Stinson. I am a policy analyst at the Federal Voting Assistance Program. We're the Department of Defense office charged with assisting members of the uniformed services and citizens overseas to assist them to vote in U.S. elections by absentee ballot. I'm sorry, sir, I couldn't quite hear what the question was, but I'm happy to help out if I can.
Yeah, so it's kind of a policy decision when someone has been registered in our state, and your expertise, of course, would be with military folks, and then they leave the state, but they retain their, this is their, where their place of residence, and apparently we allow them to vote in state and local elections based upon the area where they registered, and obviously could be not where they returned to. Have you all dealt with that issue?
Yes, sir, a little bit. Our office produces a form called the Federal Postcard Application, which is a voter registration form, an absentee ballot request for members of the services and citizens living overseas. And one of the questions on that for the overseas citizens is whether or not you intend to return, or if you're away temporarily, or if you're away indefinitely. Now, what states do with that information is what you all are talking about today, whether that voter then gets a federal-only ballot or a full ballot with state and local offices on it. States do it totally differently, though, in terms of who's entitled to the federal-only ballot, who's entitled to the full ballot. That really is kind of a policy determination that's made at the state level. And across the country, I think it's been decided just about every way possible. So.
All right. Thank you. Any questions for Scott? Thanks, Scott. Can you stand by for a bit?
Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I'll look into a little bit of history into 1505011 and find out kind of why it was crafted the way it was crafted and get back to members of the committee.
Just one idea. If we decided to go down this road is, I assume that, so you have kids, I would assume they probably have parents that live here. Is that typically the situation? Their parents live in Alaska and they're like going to school outside?
Through the chair, yes, we have that situation.
And, one suggestion that I would have for you to investigate is whether or not you could have the kids simply be registered at their parents' address. That's probably the place where they're likely to reside.
Through the chair, that is the way it works now. However, in looking back at 1505011, if the child was not previously domiciled in Alaska before leaving, that's what the provisions of the federal overseas statute is for federal. Like, say their parents lived here, and they maintain their voter registration in Anchorage, say. They then were transferred to Texas. Then their child was born in Texas, and then they moved overseas. That's what the purpose of Section 2 of this bill is for. The child themselves was not actually physically present ever in the state of Alaska, but because through association by their parents, they should be able to register to vote in the state of Alaska and vote in federal elections only.
Senator Wilkowski to continue.
And in that case, you just gave you. Are you saying the child was born overseas and then lived overseas for 18 years, and now is declaring their residency in Alaska?
Or through the chair, an example I gave is the parents were stationed at Elmendorf, say, then they were transferred to Texas, had children, still underage. The parents still maintained their voter registration in the state of Alaska. They got transferred from Texas someplace overseas. They've been stationed over there for 12 years. Their child turns 18. They're not qualified to register in the state of Alaska because they were not personally domiciled here before they left. This provision of the bill would allow them to register to vote and vote only in federal elections.
Senator Giesel.
The director clarified what I was going to point out. This relates to people living outside the U.S.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So this discussion raised the other question. How long can people be not in our state and still be qualified to vote here?
Mr. Chairman, statute is silent on that. Statute only references a voter's intent to return to the state.
Wow. Yeah. Senator Wilkowski,
just on that, and again, this is something that I've noticed just going door to door. You knock on someone's house, and the person, you'll see that someone is registered to vote at this address, and they've been a super voter, voted every election for the last 8 or 10 years, and then the person at the door will say that, well, they haven't lived here in 15 years. Are there states that deal with that in other ways? Are there states that maybe develop presumptions that, hey, if you haven't lived, sort of like what we do with the permanent fund, if you haven't lived here in 10 or 15 years, you're probably not coming back? Do you know?
Through the chair, Senator, I don't have information on how other states handle their voter intent to return, their voter registration laws. The state does practice a list maintenance procedure that is guided by federal law. Voters used to be removed prior to the National Voter Registration Act. Voters used to be able to be removed solely for the purposes of not voting. That no longer can be the case. It's about if the division has had pretty much no contact from a voter in about 4 years, they're sent notices. If a notice comes back undeliverable with a forwarding address, we then forward that notice on to the voter. If we don't hear back from them, they become inactivated. If they don't vote or appear to vote the next two general elections, then they are actually, then just they're inactive. They're actually totally dropped off the rolls.
Any other questions? Thank you. Please continue.
I've already covered sections 3, 4, and 5. Section 6 of the bill, excuse me, allows the division to designate municipal clerks as absentee voting officials in locations where we don't have an absentee voting station. Section 7 of the bill clarifies that voters other than our uniformed service officers and overseas voters who wish to get their ballot by electronic transmission are not able to apply for that ballot until 15 days before the election, which is current law. The change is that the military and overseas voters, as allowed by federal law, may apply at any time during the calendar year to get their ballot sent to them electronically. Section 8 of the bill clarifies and harmonizes with federal law that military and overseas voters will be sent their ballots no later than 45 days prior to an election. Section 9 of the bill removes a reference to receipt of by-mail ballots from overseas voters, ballots that are postmarked from overseas. The current statute has that set at 15 days, and the proposal is to have the cutoff the same for all voters 10 days following the election. Section 10, again, is harmonizing language with federal law regarding the ballot mailing deadlines for military and overseas voter. Section 11, again, is removing the reference to the 15-day post-election receipt of ballots postmarked from overseas. Section 12 of the bill changes the date of the primary election to the second Tuesday in August. Section 13 changes the withdrawal date for primary election candidates.
Senator Wilkowski?
Yes. Yeah, Section 12, that's, maybe it's not a problem. I've been contacted by some people just questioning, and this may be a good thing, it may not be a good thing, but could you address maybe the impacts to students from changing the date and to rural Alaska, particularly natives who may be subsistence fishing or during that time? Has that come up in your discussions at all? Is that a concern that you have?
Through the chairs, Senator, we had some discussions with some of our election workers in our rural areas and community, you know, folks we know in our rural areas, and shifting it 2 weeks earlier, they did not feel would have a substantial impact on their subsistence lives. We would still have absentee voting in person taking place, the ability to get a by-mail ballot prior to the election. As far as students, students going away to college, is that what you're referring to? Or
right.
By-mail voting is still an option and that's how the majority of our college students that leave and go out of state do vote, is absentee by-mail.
And then just one more, if I could, Mr. Chair. Does I guess school starts around the third week of August, I think, typically. I know in Anchorage, I believe that's about when it starts. And it seems that a lot more, many Alaskans are traveling during those times. We already have primary election turnout at probably around 25% or less. I know some areas in Anchorage where it's 8%. By holding it earlier in the summer when kids are off school and they're probably traveling, many families are probably traveling, I'm wondering if we're going to even suppress the voter turnout more. Has that been a consideration?
Senator Dyson, Mr. Chairman, Senator, I don't think there's any way to ever predict what voter turnout's going to be. I mean, I don't think there are still options available to voters as currently in statute. By-mail voting's an option. We allow early voting and absentee in-person voting 15 days before each election. You know, voting is a very personal choice. If it's important to the person, they're going to figure out a way to make it happen. We felt shifting it 2 weeks would not have such a negative impact on the lives of Alaskans. If we shifted it perhaps earlier in the summer, you would probably see some more significant impacts on people not being able to vote.
Mr. Chairman. Senator Cargill.
In shifting this, probably the other statutes that will be impacted are going to be some of the reporting issues that we have to deal with between the end of session and primaries. I don't know what those are. But we have certain APOC reporting requirements, and we have certain restrictions that we have on, for example, mail-outs. We can do to constituents. That bumps into preparation time at the end of sessions. I think we probably ought to think about that a little bit. And then when it comes to those who want to do ballot measures, you know, what's the impact to the ballot measure issue by moving it 2 weeks? I don't know if it's a big impact, but it's a question just rises in my mind.
Yeah. No, just,
do you want to respond?
I agree with Senator Cargill. I think there are, you know, it's a change to the time we have elections. I think it's something we should look at from a lot of different angles. I know we also have a lot of special sessions that go into late spring, and it'd just be interesting to sort of, I think it'd be helpful to sort of analyze how this might impact. I hadn't even thought about the APOC implications, but that's a good point.
Mr. Chairman, I have no knowledge of the APOC requirements or standards, and so perhaps somebody from APOC is obviously better suited to address that than myself, and if you would like, I could put in a request to them to look at associated deadlines and whatnot.
That would be a good idea.
All and right. I can get back to you
Mr.
also
Chairman,
on...
I think that would be a good idea.
All right. Ken, what do we have up next Tuesday?
We have one of the bill right now. So.
Yeah. Do committee members, would Tuesday give you enough time to think about and we'll get whoever you ask us to get to come and answer questions? Tuesday work?
Yeah, I don't know that Tuesday's going to work for me, Mr. Chairman.
Pardon?
I don't know that Tuesday will work for me, but if you have a quorum, then you can do whatever you want, I suppose.
Yeah, no, but...
there's a lot of people traveling next week, Mr.
Yeah.
Chairman.
We can talk about it after the committee if you want.
Yeah. Does Energy Council won't interfere unless people are leaving really early? All right, we can talk about it afterwards. Please continue.
Mr. Chairman, I believe I left off on Section 12, changing the date of the primary. Section 13, Section 14, 15, 16, 17, and 18 all have to do with changing candidate withdrawal deadlines. And Section 19 addresses judicial candidates. Section 20 I previously addressed about publishing candidate biography statement and photos on the web prior to the division's website prior to each election. Section 21 adds a definition, federal definition of what an absentee uniformed services voters and overseas voters. Section 22 allows it adjusts language in Title 29 to make it harmonious with Title 15 language, allowing municipal clerks to serve as absentee voting officials. And Section 23 is a repealer section which repeals the provision of receipt of ballots from overseas with overseas postmarks 15 days following the election, repeals the allowance for an absentee application from a uniformed military overseas citizen. Currently, it's set at, it's good for two consecutive elections, and the federal law was repealed. They found that that is not a good thing to do because military are highly transit population, and the address they provide in 2012 is not necessarily going to be an adequate, sufficient address for them in 2014. And the last repealer repeals the requirement to send special absentee ballots now that ballots are available to the voters 45 days prior to the election.
Section 15. Well, I want to ask a general question that's not specific here. So if a candidate who has survived the primary and then chooses to withdraw his candidacy, what happens?
Mr. Chairman, if they withdraw by the deadline set in statute, then the party can replace that candidate. That doesn't change in this bill.
Yeah, no, I see that. What's that time?
Currently, it is 48 days before the general election.
All right.
And the proposal in this bill is to change it to 64 days before the election.
Oh, can't be after 64 days.
Correct. And that is to allow adequate time. Once the candidate withdrawal deadline has come and gone, the division can immediately start printing ballots. And currently there's a three-day window between day 48 before the election and day 45 in which ballots have to be printed and in the mail to, you know, several thousands, nine, tens of thousands of what we call our uniformed overseas voters.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you. Any other questions or comments? All right. We will set this bill aside. Wait a minute. Is there anyone here in the room that wants to testify? Please.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Kathy Wasserman with the Alaska Municipal League. I have not had the time to research this bill as I should have, but I have a bit of a few concerns about Section 18 and Section 3. Which in the language of the Transmittal Bill said it will allow municipal clerks to serve absentee votes. I just would like to remind the committee that, as we have been told, and we understand very well that we must tighten our belt, many of these bills have ramifications which give the municipal workers more work to do. So I just would like to, either through the committee or myself, I will try to do some research to see exactly what that means. I thought the word allow municipal clerks to do this was kind of funny language. I'd never heard any of the municipal clerks say, please, give us more. So in the very small community, sometimes that municipal clerk is the only employee, and they don't even have, the small municipalities, the money to pay that person to work full time. So to put this burden on them might be something that might be a little difficult. I'm not saying that's the truth yet. I will research this more, but I would just like you to be mindful of the small ramifications that are in bills such as this. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. And thank you, Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you. And to the extent you could, I'm curious to hear how some of the rural villages react to the pushing the time back, of whether or not that impacts their, you know, if everyone's out fishing or picking berries or harvesting or whatever. I'd just be curious to hear the response to pushing the timeline back.
Senator Wilkowski, through the chair, that also seems to be a bit of a problem right now. Most of the municipalities other than Anchorage have their local elections in October. So they have that municipal election to take care of. And then, of course, the federal elections in November when those happen. And so now this one in August. So, you know, that's kind of back to back. You've got three elections going. And, you know, elections are they're a big concern, getting things mailed out, getting things in on the proper time, making sure you have everything crossed, because there's nothing worse than having a mess up in any kind of an election.
There's some people in Anchorage that agree with you.
I know there are, sir.
When you're looking at this, you might look at also the countervening thing where with this bill, the state will be running the elections for the local REA advisory boards, you know, which would unload the local folks a little bit. So there's a might be a bit of a trade-off there.
Senator Dyson, that's true, but the people that are on the ground are always the local people. The state will not be out there, for the most part, doing the grunt work of making sure everything's put together. So, respectfully.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out how that links to what I said, but thank you. Any other questions? Anybody else would like to testify? Is there anybody online? All right. So we're going to set this bill aside. We'll take it up in the relatively near future under bills previously heard. Any other business to come before the committee? All right. Thank you. We're adjourned about 9:43.